SO32 string theory. Normally, these two theories don't even look alike. The type 1 theory is based on closed and open strings that can interact in 5 different ways, with strings splitting and joining. The SO32 string, on the other hand, is based entirely on closed strings that have one possible way of interacting, undergoing mitosis, like a cell. The type 1 string is defined entirely in 10-dimensional space, while the SO32 string is defined with one set of vibrations defined in 26-dimensional space. Normally, you cannot find two theories that seem so dissimilar. However, just as in electromagnetism, the theories possess a powerful duality. If you let the strength of the interactions increase, type 1 strings change into SO32 heterotic strings, as if by magic. This result is so unexpected that when I first saw this result, I had to shake my head in amazement. In physics, we rarely see two theories that appear totally dissimilar in all respects being shown to be mathematically equivalent. Lisa Randall. Perhaps the greatest advantage that M-theory has over string theory is that these higher dimensions, instead of being quite small, may actually be quite large and even observable in the laboratory. In string theory, 6 of the higher dimensions must be wrapped up into a tiny ball, a Calabi-Yau manifold, too small to be observed with today's instruments. These 6 dimensions have all been compactified, so that entering a higher dimension is impossible, more than a little disappointing to those who would one day hope to soar into an infinite hyperspace, rather than merely take brief shortcuts through compactified hyperspace via wormholes. However, M-theory also features membranes. It is possible to view our entire universe as a membrane floating in a much larger universe. As a result, not all of these higher dimensions have to be wrapped up in a ball. Some of them, in fact, can be huge, infinite in extent. One physicist who has tried to exploit this new picture of the universe is Lisa Randall of Harvard. Resembling the actress Jodie Foster a bit, Randall seems out of place in the fiercely competitive, testosterone-driven, intensely male profession of theoretical physics. She is pursuing the idea that if the universe is really a 3-brain floating in higher dimensional space, perhaps that explains why gravity is so much weaker than the other 3 forces. Randall grew up in Queens, New York, the same borough immortalized by Archie Bunker. While she showed no particular interest in physics as a child, she adored mathematics. Although I believe we are all born scientists as children, not all of us manage to continue our love of science as adults. One reason is that we hit the brick wall of mathematics. Whether we like it or not, if we are to pursue a career in science, eventually we have to learn the language of nature, mathematics. Without mathematics, we can only be passive observers to the dance of nature, rather than active participants. As Einstein once said, pure mathematics is, in its way, the poetry of logical ideas. Let me offer an analogy. One may love French civilization and literature, but to truly understand the French mind, one must learn the French language and how to conjugate French verbs. The same is true of science and mathematics. Galileo once wrote, "The universe cannot be read until we have learnt the language and become familiar with the characters in which it is written. It is written in mathematical language, and the letters are triangles, circles, and other geometrical figures, without which means it is humanly impossible to understand a single word." But mathematicians often pride themselves at being the most impractical of all scientists. The more abstract and useless the mathematics, the better. What set Randall off into a different direction while an undergraduate at Harvard in the early 1980s was the fact that she loved the idea that physics can create models of the universe. When we physicists first propose a new theory, it is not simply based on a bunch of equations. New physical theories are usually based on simplified, idealized models which approximate a phenomenon. These models are usually graphic, pictorial, and simple to grasp. The quark model, for example, is based on the idea that within a proton there are three small constituents, the quarks. Randall was impressed that simple models based on physical pictures could adequately explain much of the universe. In the 1990s, she became interested in M theory, in the possibility that the entire universe was a membrane. She zeroed in on perhaps the most puzzling feature of gravity, that its strength is astronomically small. Neither Newton nor Einstein had addressed this fundamental but mysterious question. While the other three forces of the universe, electromagnetism, the weak nuclear force, and the strong nuclear force, are roughly all of the same strength, gravity is wildly different. In particular, the masses of the quarks are so much smaller than the mass associated with quantum gravity. The discrepancy is not small. The two mass scales are separated by 16 orders of magnitude. Only theories that explain this huge ratio are likely candidates for theories underlying the Standard Model, says Randall. The fact that gravity is so weak explains why the stars are so big. Earth, with its oceans, mountains, and continents, is nothing but a tiny speck when compared to the massive size of the sun. But because gravity is so weak, it takes the mass of an entire star to squeeze hydrogen so that it can overcome the proton's electrical force of repulsion. So stars are so massive because gravity is so weak compared to the other forces. With M theory generating so much excitement in physics, several groups have tried to apply this theory to our universe. Assume the universe is a three-brain floating in a five-dimensional world. This time, the vibrations on the surface of the three-brain correspond to the atoms we see around us. Thus, these vibrations never leave the three-brain and hence cannot drift off into the fifth dimension. Even though our universe floats in the fifth dimension, our atoms cannot leave our universe because they represent vibrations on the surface of the three-brain. This, then, can answer the question Kaluza and Einstein asked in 1921. Where is the fifth dimension? The answer is, we are floating in the fifth dimension, but we cannot enter it because our bodies are stuck on the surface of a three-brain. But there is a potential flaw in this picture. Gravity represents the curvature of space. Thus, naively, we might expect that gravity can fill up all five-dimensional space, rather than just the three-brain. In doing so, gravity would be diluted as it leaves the three-brain. This weakens the force of gravity. This is a good thing in supporting the theory, because gravity, we know, is so much weaker than the other forces. But it weakens gravity too much. Newton's inverse square law would be violated. Yet the inverse square law works perfectly well for planets, stars, and galaxies. Nowhere in space do we find an inverse cube law for gravity. Imagine a light bulb illuminating a room. The light spreads out in a sphere. The strength of the light is diluted across this sphere. Thus, if you double the radius of the sphere, then the light is spread out over the sphere with four times the area. In general, if a light bulb exists in n-dimensional space, then its light is diluted across a sphere whose area increases as the radius is raised to the n-1 power. To answer this question, a group of physicists, including N. Arkani Hamed, S. Dimopoulos, and G. Dvali, have suggested that perhaps the fifth dimension is not infinite, but is a millimeter away from ours, floating just above our universe, as in H.G. Wells's science fiction story. If the fifth dimension were farther than a millimeter away, then it might create measurable violations of Newton's inverse square law. If the fifth dimension is only a millimeter away, this prediction could be tested by looking for tiny deviations to Newton's law of gravity over very small distances. Newton's law of gravity works fine over astronomical distances, but it has never been tested down to the size of a millimeter. Experimentalists are now rushing to test for tiny deviations from Newton's inverse square law. This result is currently the subject of several ongoing experiments, as we see in Chapter 9. Randall and her colleague Raman Sundrum decided to take a new approach, to re-examine the possibility that the fifth dimension was not a millimeter away, but perhaps even infinite. To do this, they had to explain how the fifth dimension could be infinite without destroying Newton's law of gravity. This is where Randall found a potential answer to the puzzle. She found that the three brain has a gravitational pull of its own that prevents gravitons from drifting freely into the fifth dimension. The gravitons have to cling to the three brain, like flies trapped on flypaper, because of the gravity exerted by the three brain. Thus, when we try to measure Newton's law, we find that it is approximately correct in our universe. Gravity is diluted and weakened as it leaves the three brain and drifts into the fifth dimension. But it doesn't get very far. The inverse square law is still roughly maintained because gravitons are still attracted to the three brain. Randall also introduced the possibility of a second membrane existing parallel to ours. If we calculate the subtle interaction of gravity across the two membranes, it can be adjusted so that we can numerically explain the weakness of gravity. There was a lot of excitement when it was first suggested that extra dimensions provide alternative ways to address the origin of the hierarchy problem, Randall says. Additional spatial dimensions may seem like a wild and crazy idea at first, but there are powerful reasons to believe that there really are extra dimensions of space. If these physicists are correct, then gravity is just as strong as the other forces, except that gravity is attenuated because some of it leaks into higher dimensional space. One profound consequence of this theory is that the energy at which these quantum effects become measurable may not be the Planck energy, 10 to the 19th power billion electron volts, as previously thought. Perhaps only trillions of electron volts are necessary, in which case the Large Hadron Collider, completed in 2008, may be able to pick up quantum gravitational effects within this decade. This has stimulated considerable interest among experimental physicists to hunt for exotic particles beyond the standard model of subatomic particles. Perhaps quantum gravitational effects are just within our reach. Membranes also give a plausible, though speculative, answer to the riddle of dark matter. In H.G. Wells's novel The Invisible Man, the protagonist hovered in the fourth dimension and hence was invisible. Similarly, imagine that there is a parallel world hovering just above our own universe. Any galaxy in that parallel universe would be invisible to us. But because gravity is caused by the bending of hyperspace, gravity could hop across universes. Any large galaxy in that universe would be attracted across hyperspace to a galaxy in our universe. Thus, when we measure the properties of our galaxies, we would find that their gravitational pull was much stronger than expected from Newton's laws, because there is another galaxy hiding right behind it, floating on a nearby brain. This hidden galaxy, perched behind our galaxy, would be totally invisible, floating in another dimension, but it would give the appearance of a halo surrounding our galaxy containing 90% of the mass. Thus, dark matter may be caused by the presence of a parallel universe. Colliding Universes. It may be a bit premature to apply M-theory to serious cosmology. Nonetheless, physicists have tried to apply brain physics to make a new twist on the usual inflationary approach to the universe. Three possible cosmologies have attracted some attention. The first cosmology tries to answer the question, why do we live in four space-time dimensions? In principle, M-theory can be formulated in all dimensions up to 11, so it seems like a mystery that four dimensions are singled out. Robert Brandenburger and Kumran Vatha have speculated that this may be due to the particular geometry of strings. In their scenario, the universe started perfectly symmetrically, with all higher dimensions tightly curled up at the Planck scale. What kept the universe from expanding were loops of strings that tightly coiled around the various dimensions. Think of a compressed coil that cannot expand because it is tightly wrapped by strings. If the strings somehow break, the coil suddenly springs free and expands. In these tiny dimensions, the universe is prevented from expanding because we have windings of both strings and anti-strings. Roughly speaking, anti-strings wind in the opposite direction from strings. If a string and anti-string collide, then they can annihilate and disappear, like the unraveling of a knot. In very large dimensions, there is so much room that strings and anti-strings rarely collide and never unravel. However, Brandenburger and Vatha show that in three or fewer spatial dimensions, it is more likely that strings will collide with anti-strings. Once these collisions take place, the strings unravel, and the dimensions spring rapidly outward, giving us the Big Bang. The appealing feature of this picture is that the topology of strings explains roughly why we see the familiar four-dimensional space-time around us. Higher-dimensional universes are possible, but less likely to be seen, because they are still wrapped up tightly by strings and anti-strings. But there are other possibilities in M-theory as well. If universes can pinch or bud off each other, spawning new universes, then perhaps the reverse can happen. Universes can collide, creating sparks in the process, spawning new universes. In such a scenario, perhaps the Big Bang occurred because of a collision of two parallel brain universes, rather than the budding of a universe. This second theory was proposed by the physicists Paul Steinhardt of Princeton, Bert Overath of the University of Pennsylvania, and Neil Turok of Cambridge University, who created the ekpyrotic universe, meaning conflagration in Greek, to incorporate the novel features of the M-brain picture, in which some of the extra dimensions could be large and even infinite in size. They begin with two flat, homogeneous, and parallel three-brains that represent the lowest energy state. Originally, they start as empty, cold universes, but gravity gradually pulls them together. They eventually collide, and the vast kinetic energy of the collision is converted into the matter and radiation making up our universe. Some call this the Big Splat theory, rather than the Big Bang theory, because the scenario involves the collision of two brains. The force of the collision pushes the two universes apart. As these two membranes separate from each other, they cool rapidly, giving us the universe we see today. The cooling and expansion continue for trillions of years, until the universes approach absolute zero in temperature, and the density is only one electron per quadrillion cubic light-years of space. In effect, the universe becomes empty and inert. But gravity continues to attract the two membranes, until, trillions of years later, they collide once again, and the cycle repeats all over again. This new scenario is able to obtain the good results of inflation, flatness, uniformity. It solves the question of why the universe is so flat, because the two brains were flat to begin with. The model can also explain the horizon problem, that is, why the universe seems so remarkably uniform in all directions. It is because the membrane has a long time to slowly reach equilibrium. Thus, while inflation explains the horizon problem by having the universe inflate abruptly, this scenario solves the horizon problem in the opposite way, by having the universe reach equilibrium in slow motion. This also means that there are possibly other membranes floating out there in hyperspace that may collide with ours in the future, creating another big splat. Given the fact that our universe is accelerating, another collision may in fact be likely. Steinhardt adds, "Maybe the acceleration of the expansion of the universe is a precursor of such a collision. It is not a pleasant thought." Any scenario that dramatically challenges the prevailing picture of inflation is bound to elicit heated replies. In fact, within a week of the paper being placed on the web, André Linde and his wife Renata Kalosh, herself a string theorist, and Lev Kaufman of the University of Toronto issued a critique of this scenario. Linde criticized this model because anything so catastrophic as the collision of two universes might create a singularity where temperatures and densities approach infinity. That would be like throwing a chair into a black hole, which would vaporize the particles of the chair, and saying it somehow preserves the shape of the chair, Linde protested. Steinhardt fired back, saying, "What looks like a singularity in four dimensions may not be one in five dimensions. When the brains crunch together, the fifth dimension disappears temporarily, but the brains themselves don't disappear, so the density and temperature don't go to infinity, and time continues right through. Although general relativity goes berserk, string theory does not, and what once looked like a disaster in our model now seems manageable." Steinhardt has on his side the power of M-theory, which is known to eliminate singularities. In fact, that is the reason theoretical physicists need a quantum theory of gravity to begin with, to eliminate all infinities. Linde, however, points out a conceptual vulnerability of this picture, that the brains existed in a flat, uniform state at the beginning. "If you start with perfection, you might be able to explain what you see, but you still haven't answered the question, why must the universe start out perfect?" Linde says. Steinhardt answers back, "Flat plus flat equals flat." In other words, you have to assume that the membranes started out in the lowest energy state of being flat. Alan Guth has kept an open mind. "I don't think Paul and Neil come close to proving their case, but their ideas are certainly worth looking at," he says. He turns the tables and challenges string theorists to explain inflation. "In the long run, I think it's inevitable that string theory and M-theory will need to incorporate inflation, since inflation seems to be an obvious solution to the problems it was designed to address. That is, why is the universe so uniform and flat?" So he asks the question, can M-theory derive the standard picture of inflation? Last, there is another competing theory of cosmology that employs string theory, the pre-Big Bang theory of Gabriel Veneziano, the physicist who helped start string theory back in 1968. In his theory, the universe actually started out as a black hole. If we want to know what the inside of a black hole looks like, all we have to do is look outside. In this theory, the universe is actually infinitely old and started out in the distant past as being nearly empty and cold. Gravity began to create lumps of matter throughout the universe, which gradually condensed into regions so dense that they turned into black holes. Event horizons began to form around each black hole, permanently separating the exterior of the event horizon from the interior. Within each event horizon, matter continued to be compressed by gravity, until the black hole eventually reached the Planck length. At this point, string theory takes over. The Planck length is the minimum distance allowed by string theory. The black hole then begins to rebound in a huge explosion, causing the Big Bang. Since this process may repeat itself throughout the universe, this means that there may be other distant black holes / universes. The idea that our universe might be a black hole is not as far-fetched as it seems. We have the intuitive notion that a black hole must be extremely dense, with an enormous, crushing gravitational field, but this is not always the case. The size of a black hole's event horizon is proportional to its mass. The more massive a black hole is, the larger its event horizon. But a larger event horizon means that matter is spread out over a larger volume. As a result, the density actually decreases as the mass increases. In fact, if a black hole were to weigh as much as our universe, its size would be approximately the size of our universe, and its density would be quite low, comparable to the density of our universe. Some astrophysicists, however, are not impressed with the application of string theory and M theory to cosmology. Joel Primack of the University of California at Santa Cruz is less charitable than others. "I think it's silly to make much of a production about this stuff. The ideas in these papers are essentially untestable." Only time will tell if Primack is right. But because the pace of string theory has been accelerating, we may find a resolution of this problem soon, and it may come from our space satellites. As we see in Chapter 9, a new generation of gravity wave detectors to be sent into outer space by 2020, like LISA, may give us the ability to rule out or verify some of these theories. If the inflation theory is correct, LISA might possibly be able to detect violent gravity waves created by the original inflationary process. The ekpyrotic universe, however, predicts a slow collision between universes and hence much milder gravity waves. LISA might be able to rule out one of these theories experimentally. In other words, encoded within gravity waves created by the original Big Bang are the data necessary to determine which scenario is correct. LISA, or its successors, may give solid experimental results concerning inflation, string theory, and M theory. Mini black holes. Since string theory is really a theory of the entire universe, to test it directly requires creating a universe in the laboratory. See Chapter 9. Normally, we expect quantum effects from gravity to occur at the Planck energy, which is a quadrillion times more powerful than our most powerful particle accelerator, making direct tests of string theory impossible. But if there really is a parallel universe that exists less than a millimeter from ours, then the energy at which unification and quantum effects occur may be quite low, within reach of the next generation of particle accelerators, such as the Large Hadron Collider, LHC. This, in turn, has sparked an avalanche of interest in black hole physics, the most exciting being the mini black hole. Mini black holes, which act as if they are subatomic particles, are a laboratory in which one can test some of the predictions of string theory. Physicists are excited about the possibility of creating them with the LHC. Mini black holes are so small, comparable to an electron in size, that there is no threat that they will swallow up Earth. Cosmic rays routinely hit Earth with energies exceeding these mini black holes, with no ill effect on the planet. As revolutionary as it may seem, a black hole masquerading as a subatomic particle is actually an old idea, first introduced by Einstein in 1935. In Einstein's view, there must be a unified field theory in which matter, made of subatomic particles, could be viewed as some sort of distortion in the fabric of space-time. To him, subatomic particles like the electron were actually kinks or wormholes in curved space that, from a distance, looked like a particle. Einstein, with Nathan Rosen, toyed with the idea that an electron may actually be a mini black hole in disguise. In his way, he tried to incorporate matter into this unified field theory, which would reduce subatomic particles to pure geometry. Mini black holes were introduced again by Stephen Hawking, who proved that black holes must evaporate and emit a faint glow of energy. Over many eons, a black hole would emit so much energy that it would gradually shrink, eventually becoming the size of a subatomic particle. String theory is now reintroducing the concept of mini black holes. Recall that black holes form when a large amount of matter is compressed to within its Schwarzschild radius. Because mass and energy can be converted into each other, black holes can also be created by compressing energy. There is considerable interest in whether the LHC may be able to produce mini black holes among the debris created by smashing two protons together at 14 trillion electron volts of energy. These black holes would be very tiny, weighing perhaps only 1,000 times the mass of an electron, and last for only 10 to the negative 23rd power seconds. But they would be clearly visible among the tracks of subatomic particles created by the LHC. Physicists also hope that cosmic rays from outer space may contain mini black holes. The Pierre Auger Cosmic Ray Observatory in Argentina is so sensitive that it can detect some of the largest bursts of cosmic rays ever recorded by science. The hope is that mini black holes may be found naturally among cosmic rays, which would create a characteristic shower of radiation when they hit Earth's upper atmosphere. One calculation shows that the Auger cosmic ray detector might be able to see up to 10 cosmic ray showers per year triggered by a mini black hole. The detection of a mini black hole, either at the LHC in Switzerland or the Auger cosmic ray detector in Argentina, perhaps within this decade, would provide perhaps good evidence for the existence of parallel universes. Although it would not conclusively prove the correctness of string theory, it would convince the entire physics community that string theory is consistent with all experimental results and is in the right direction. Black holes and the information paradox. String theory may also shed light on some of the deepest paradoxes of black hole physics, such as the information paradox. As you will recall, black holes are not perfectly black, but emit small amounts of radiation via tunneling. Because of the quantum theory, there is always the small chance that radiation can escape the vice-like grip of a black hole's gravity. This leads to a slow leakage of radiation from a black hole, called Hawking radiation. This radiation, in turn, has a temperature associated with it, which is proportional to the surface area of the black hole's event horizon. Hawking gave a general derivation of this equation that involved a lot of hand-waving. However, a rigorous derivation of this result would require using the full power of statistical mechanics, based on counting the quantum states of a black hole. Usually, statistical mechanical calculations are done by counting the number of states that an atom or molecule can occupy. But how do you count the quantum states of a black hole? In Einstein's theory, black holes are perfectly smooth, so counting their quantum states was problematic. String theorists were anxious to close this gap, so Andrew Strominger and Komram Vaffa of Harvard decided to analyze a black hole using M-theory. Since the black hole itself was too difficult to work with, they took a different approach and asked a clever question. What is the dual to a black hole? We recall that an electron is dual to a magnetic monopole, such as a single north pole. Hence, by examining an electron in a weak electric field, which is easy to do, we can analyze a much more difficult experiment, a monopole placed in a very large magnetic field. The hope was that the duel of the black hole would be easier to analyze than the black hole itself, although they would ultimately have the same final result. By a series of mathematical manipulations, Strominger and Waffa were able to show that the black hole was dual to a collection of one brains and five brains. This was a tremendous relief, since counting the quantum states of these brains was known. When Strominger and Waffa then calculated the number of quantum states, they found that the answer precisely reproduced Hawking's result. This was a piece of welcome news. String theory, which is sometimes ridiculed for not connecting with the real world, gave perhaps the most elegant solution for black hole thermodynamics. Now string theorists are trying to tackle the most difficult problem in black hole physics, the information paradox. Hawking has argued that if you throw something into a black hole, the information it carries is lost forever, never to return again. This would be a clever way to commit the perfect crime. A criminal could use a black hole to destroy all incriminating evidence. From a distance, the only parameters that we can measure for a black hole are its mass, spin, and charge. No matter what you throw into a black hole, you lose all its information. This goes by the statement that black holes have no hair. That is, they have lost all information, all hair, except for these three parameters. The loss of information from our universe seems to be an inevitable consequence of Einstein's theory, but this violates the principles of quantum mechanics, which state that information can never really be lost. Somewhere, the information must be floating in our universe, even if the original object was sent down the throat of a black hole. Most physicists want to believe that information is not lost, Hawking has written, as this would make the world safe and predictable. But I believe that if one takes Einstein's general relativity seriously, one must allow for the possibility that space-time ties itself in knots and that information gets lost in the folds. Determining whether or not information actually does get lost is one of the major questions in theoretical physics today. This paradox, which pits Hawking against most string theorists, still has not been resolved. But the betting among string theorists is that we will eventually find where the missing information went. For example, if you throw a book into a black hole, it is conceivable that the information contained in the book will gently seep back out into our universe in the form of tiny vibrations contained within the Hawking radiation of an evaporating black hole. Or perhaps it reemerges from a white hole on the other side of the black hole. That is why I personally feel that when someone finally calculates what happens to information when it disappears into a black hole in string theory, he or she will find that information is not really lost, but subtly reappears somewhere else. In 2004, in a stunning reversal, Hawking made the front page of the New York Times when he announced before TV cameras that he was wrong about the information problem. 30 years ago, he bet other physicists that information could never leak out of a black hole. The loser of the bet was to give the winner an encyclopedia, from which information can be easily retrieved. Redoing some of his earlier calculations, he concluded that if an object such as a book fell into a black hole, it might disturb the radiation field it emits, allowing information to leak back into the universe. The information contained within the book would be encoded in the radiation slowly seeping out of the black hole, but in mangled form. On one hand, this put Hawking in line with the majority of quantum physicists, who believe that information cannot be lost. But it also raised the question, can information pass to a parallel universe? On the surface, his results seem to cast doubt on the idea that information may pass through a wormhole into a parallel universe. However, no one believes that this is the last word on the subject. Until string theory is fully developed, or a complete quantum gravitational calculation is made, no one will believe that the information paradox is fully resolved. The Holographic Universe. Last, there is a rather mysterious prediction of M-theory that is still not understood, but may have deep physical and philosophical consequences. This result forces us to ask the question, is the universe a hologram? Is there a shadow universe in which our bodies exist in a compressed, two-dimensional form? This also raises another equally disturbing question. Is the universe a computer program? Can the universe be placed on a CD to be played at our leisure? Holograms are now found on credit cards, in children's museums, and in amusement parks. They are remarkable because they can capture a complete three-dimensional image on a two-dimensional surface. Normally, if you glance at a photograph and then move your head, the image on the photograph does not change. But a hologram is different. When you glance at a holographic picture and then move your head, you find the picture changing, as if you were looking at the image through a window or a keyhole. Holograms may eventually lead to three-dimensional TV and movies. In the future, perhaps we will relax in our living room and glance at a wall screen that gives us the complete three-dimensional image of distant locations, as if the TV wall screen were actually a window peering out over a new landscape. Furthermore, if the wall screen were shaped like a large cylinder with our living room placed in the center, it would appear as if we were transported to a new world. Everywhere we looked, we would see the three-dimensional image of a new reality, indistinguishable from the real thing. The essence of the hologram is that the two-dimensional surface of the hologram encodes all the information necessary to reproduce a three-dimensional image. Holograms are made in the laboratory by shining laser light onto a sensitive photographic plate and allowing the light to interfere with laser light from the original source. The interference of the two light sources creates an interference pattern that freezes the image onto the two-dimensional plate. Some cosmologists have conjectured that this may also apply to the universe itself, that perhaps we live in a hologram. The origin of this strange speculation arises from black hole physics. Bekenstein and Hawking conjecture that the total amount of information contained in a black hole is proportional to the surface area of its event horizon, which is a sphere. This is a strange result, because usually the information stored in an object is proportional to its volume. For example, the amount of information stored in a book is proportional to its size, not to the surface area of its cover. We know this instinctively when we say that we cannot judge a book by its cover, but this intuition fails for black holes. We can completely judge a black hole by its cover. We may dismiss this curious hypothesis because black holes are strange oddities in themselves, where normal intuition breaks down. However, this result also applies to M-theory, which may give us the best description of the entire universe. In 1997, Juan Maldacena at the Institute for Advanced Study at Princeton created quite a sensation when he showed that string theory leads to a new type of holographic universe. He started with a five-dimensional anti-de Sitter universe, which often appears in string theory and supergravity theory. A de Sitter universe is one with a positive cosmological constant that creates an accelerating universe. We recall that our universe is currently best represented as a de Sitter universe, with a cosmological constant pushing the galaxies away at faster and faster velocities. An anti-de Sitter universe has a negative cosmological constant and hence can implode. Maldacena showed that there is a duality between this five-dimensional universe and its boundary, which is a four-dimensional universe. Strangely enough, any beings living in this five-dimensional space would be mathematically equivalent to beings living in this four-dimensional space. There is no way to tell them apart. By crude analogy, think of a fish swimming inside a goldfish bowl. These fish think that their fish bowl corresponds to reality. Now, imagine a two-dimensional holographic image of these fish that is projected onto the surface of the fish bowl. This image contains an exact replica of the original fish, except they are flattened. Any movement the fish make in the fishbowl is mirrored by the flat image on the surface of the fishbowl. Both the fish swimming in the bowl and the flattened fish living on the surface of the bowl